This is the Voice of America's continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 15, man's fourth visit to the lunar surface. Astronauts David Scott and James Irwin stepped onto the lunar surface for the second time a few moments ago from the Lunar Module Falcon for their second traverse by lunar rover. Today they will drive to the foot of the Apennine Mountains. Several small problems have delayed today's excursion more than an hour. For a running account of this second EVA excursion, we take you now to the manned spacecraft center at Houston and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner.
Those several problems are these. First, there was a delay in opening the hatch because there was a slight problem in getting the portable life support systems operating properly. There was an air bubble in a connection device. Well, that eventually cleared up. Then Jim Irwin, that's Dave Scott. They're outside on the surface already. The second problem was with Jim Irwin's antenna on the top of his portable life support system. It was broken off at a hinge. It was broken off at a hinge, and it has now been taped on and seems to be working properly because that was the sound of his voice there you just heard. And they were about an hour and 10 minutes late getting out onto the surface of the moon. They're outside working on the lunar rover right now and getting ready for the second traverse. This is the long one, up to 7.5 kilometers away, down along the Hadley, the Apennine front. Let's listen.
Off scale low, Joe. Except, of course, the battery bolts, about 7-1 on number one, and number two is still zero.
Okay, copy. That was an easy reading.
They're working on the rover. Dave Scott just changed the LCRU batteries.
Circuit breakers are coming in.
He's now switching some circuit breakers in. With us is astronaut Fred Hayes, who knows this system very well because he's training with the rover as backup commander of the next mission to the moon. Fred, looks like everything's sort of back to normal, looking good here, other than just running a little late in the time,
yes,
line, doesn't it?
Of course, that is probably going to result in eating a little bit into their next rest period.
Uh-huh. They're going to pursue with the EVA, obviously, and rest just a little less. That's always the decision.
Yeah, although the estimate is the EVA may not last the 7 hours predicted, again, based on the oxygen rate seen yesterday, usage
mm-hmm.
rate.
Mm-hmm.
So they may pick up another half an hour that way.
Let me expand on that just a bit. Yesterday, Dave Scott particularly used just a bit more oxygen than expected in this total seven-hour period. He's a big man who worked very, very hard, and when you work, you use oxygen. And so it caused the EVA to be shortened about 30 minutes in order to remain well within safety margins. And so it's anticipated this may be done again today. I've got a good guess that they're not going to use up as much oxygen today on the rover as they did yesterday during that first EVA. That's Jim Irwin. His transmissions sound good and clear here at this point.
I can if you want, Jim. Sounds good.
And Mag Delta is on the 16-millimeter, and it seems to be working okay.
Okay, great, Dave. Thank you.
That's Magazine D on the 16-millimeter movie camera.
And, Joe, I'm in a position to take another crack at that steering if you'd like to bump me through the procedures.
They're just getting to this. They're going to try to do something for the front wheel steering on the rover.
I want you to exercise the forward steering switch by cycling from bus A to bus C and back several times, and then stop with the switch finally at bus Charlie.
Roger, and work.
And the procedure you just heard is basically cycling the steering.
I'm going to take bag number three off the back of the pallet. Put number six there so we keep the number straight.
That's Jim Irwin on the back, out
okay.
behind the rover working on stowage here.
So they're putting forward steering from battery one to two.
Forward is now at bus Charlie, and I cycled it three times.
Okay,
that's Scott talking about the circuit breaker, Charlie.
give me a call when you're ready to start driving.
Okay, well, we got a few things. Jim still has a few things to do. I just thought I'd take care of the other little sundry items if I could.
Okay, Fred, go ahead and explain what he
yeah,
just did.
Okay, Dave, basically the rest of the procedure is...
let's see, well, one more procedure.
Cycle the forward steering circuit breaker open and then close and then attempt forward steering. You can do that when you're power on. And if there's no forward steering, we're going to ask that the forward steering switch be turned off. Do you copy?
His voice is going to the moon and back.
Roger.
So basically, they're hoping that there's something loose in the circuit breaker switch, and by cycling these items, you may jar whatever's shorting a contact or a relay loose.
This is in the switch panel or the navigation and control panel right on the front of the rover between the two pilots. That's
right,
Jim Irwin with another stowage item where he's putting some of the equipment bags on the back of the rover. Bag number 7.
Again, I'll be transferring some core tubes.
Roger.
Gonna take some more of these deep core samples. Okay, do you, they were talking about just cycling switches. That just means throwing them on and off, hopefully to clean some contacts or to cause a stuck relay to actuate, right?
That's right. Or one pole, these switches are multiple pole switches, and sometimes one of the contacts will latch up or latch out, in this case, to the off position on that steering.
Mm-hmm.
And if you cycle them several times, sometimes you can jar them loose.
Have you had this sort of thing to happen on the Earth Trainer that you've been driving?
No.
Uh-huh.
No, I've
never
had any problem at all with the...
this is one of the points to make, is once you get into this very light gravity or having made the trip through zero gravity, it's unpredictable what will happen to some of these mechanical systems, particularly with mechanics. Also,
yes.
Great temperature ranges and variations in the trip.
And vibration.
And vibration,
yes.
Yeah. But they didn't worry about that yesterday. The rear steering worked beautifully, so off they went, as close to the timeline as possible, down to Hadley Rill, to Elbow Crater, St. George's Crater, and their first samples of the Apennine Front. Now, the main objective today, to go back and do more, especially along the Apennine Front. And then a secondary cluster of craters, this is expected to be material thrown out from the Mare Imbrium event, I believe. The Mare Imbrium, the great sea, sort of the right eye of the man in the moon as he looks at us. Which is believed to have been caused eons ago by a collision of a great meteorite or asteroid into the surface of the moon.
Dave, when convenient, we'd like for you to confirm for us PM1 wideband and LCRU on internal, please.
There's another instruction
okay,
from Joe Allen.
Setting up the relay comm box on the rover.
The relay, the communications relay system.
And the secondary crater cluster, just if I may correct, Dred, I just had the big geology pitch a couple of days ago in this area. They really felt that cluster, if they traced back the depressions and the direction of travel, they must have come in, the ejecta, from a crater called Autolycus.
Oh, yes, yes. There's Aristarchus and Autolycus up in the Mare.
Right, which would have been sometime after the Imbrium event.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. These are unknowns, you see, and you can't really find out until you go there and sample. And then we need to know how Autolycus then was formed. We need to land at Autolycus in order to put data together to prove it. Jim Irwin is still stowing some of the equipment there under the commander.
I've got a lot
of
bags under my seat, Joe.
He's going to be sitting on top of
okay,
a big
Jimmy,
bunch
I
of bags.
Okay, Jimmy, I hope we can fill some of them.
Right. We'll do our best. Here.
This so far that
brush, yeah.
That taped down antenna is working very well. Of course, they're still very close to both vehicles there. Let's see, does he have to climb back inside and change the communications, the relay through the rover again before they leave? Do you recall? I wonder if
I'm not sure on this.
Since he just changed the LCRU batteries, then obviously they wouldn't be relaying through the rover yet.
No, it looks like he does not. Mm-hmm. He does not return to the limb this time.
Why don't we just put one under your thing, one under mine? Good. I tell you, that ridge brush really does the trick.
Dave is commenting on a little brush.
Go ahead.
That's a, it's about 5 inches long and maybe an inch in diameter.
Somebody called it a lens brush.
That, yes, it's exactly what it's used for, to clean off the Hasselblad and sequence camera lenses.
Matter of fact, we were having to wipe the dust off of the settings every time we took a picture so we could see them, and the lenses got pretty dusty, but they're all cleaned off now.
Yes, sir, we copied and sounds good now.
And in fact, on Apollo 14, they used that same brush to clean off the television camera lens at one point.
They needed to clean that television camera lens off before the end of the EVA yesterday. I noticed every time the camera came around close to the sun, there was and the sun could shine on the front of that lens. We were getting some halo. Quite a bit of dust. In fact, more dust than on any of the previous lunar landing missions.
Okay.
Jim Irwin's with another bag right there. Get to my tongs here, one of the fellas.
Yeah, the bags, they're carrying three of the stowage bags, that the very small cup dispenser size bags that the rocks are put in are subsequently stowed in, and they can get back and put them in the rock boxes. These bags are the order of 1 foot deep by about 8 or 10 inches wide by maybe 6 inches.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, I guess I'm in a position here. I got him, bag number two on the right side. Position to put your gear on you. Okay, you on me. Okay, stand by one, Jim. Hey, in the meantime, I'll look at the seatbelt. I can do anything with it.
Checking the seatbelt. He had a little trouble yesterday getting the seatbelt extended enough to reach around that inflated pressure suit. But boy, from the sound of their trip on the rover yesterday, it was an absolute necessity. They were really bounding over craters, over bumps, down into small valleys. And they actually did one skid that was 180 degrees as they came over one hump of some sort. With that rear steering, that made skids more possible, didn't it?
Yeah, Dave commented that it was actually due to the rear steering itself, but rather the fact the front wheels are locked up, and they bit in when he tried to make a turn going downslope, and spun the vehicle around.
Mm-hmm. It's got a very low center of gravity, though.
Yes.
It's pretty flat to the ground. We heard a minute ago Jim Irwin describing the bags he's stowing. He mentioned
all the way on my seat belt. Okay, well, I think without the extension handle, that'll work okay.
Jim has now extended the adjustment all the way out on his seat belt. He should have plenty of slack there to tighten it up when he gets into the seat.
Dave and Jim, this is Houston. Are you putting the collection bags on now?
This is the equipment
okay,
for the documented sampling.
We think you should wind up with collection bags 3 and 7 on your plisses and not collection bag 2, which should still be under the seat.
Documented sampling.
I'm sorry, not on the plisses, on the hand tool carrier.
Comprehensive sampling, all sorts of sampling. These bags have to be very carefully accounted for.
Right side. On the Plissis, Joe, we're going to put on number 2 and number 5, just like in the...
No, that's wrong.
Huh?
That's wrong.
Oh, you changed it, huh?
Somehow we have bag... wrong gears in bag 2.
How did that happen?
We still have the core tubes in here.
Oh, yeah.
I'll get bag 3.
Okay, Joe.
Okay, Jim, that's right on. You understand it.
By the way, bag...
Yeah.
Joe, bag number 162 has that little glass Aggie in it.
Talking about the very small sampling bag that's
Roger,
about
baby,
a Dixie cup size,
back.
Paper cup. The other large bags they're talking about are all identical. But it's important you know which bag is stowed in which place so you can sort out easier to sort out later where the samples ended up. Oh,
indeed. Another couple little samples that were sitting there. Okay, let me get you.
I think he's picked up
Tammy?
A couple more of these little glass balls that really fascinated. He's talking about a minute ago. He says Scott says bag 162 has that little glass Aggie in it. As every American boy knows, an Aggie is a marble. And if you've ever played marbles, that's one of the great fascinations of youth. And if he sees Aggies all over the surface of the moon, we're going to have a time today. Did you play with Aggies, Fred?
Oh, yes.
Did you have one of those big ones
that's
about as big as a
golf
ball? Being
loaded up there, can you glance over and confirm for us that the LRV bat covers have closed automatically?
The rover battery covers.
No, the right one's still up.
Yeah, the right one's still up.
Okay, Jim, thank you. We'll ask you to move that one down before you climb on.
They change the batteries after each of these EVAs so that you start out fresh every time. What's the outer limit, Fred, on battery life for... in time, how long can you run on the battery?
Well, they're good for all three EVAs. The batteries they're changing are for the
just
communications.
The LCLU?
Yes, just for the relay unit.
The main rover batteries will go for all three EVAs?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am straight. Are you kidding? I'm in a crater. You want to move back?
No, I can get it.
Dave said, here we go a minute ago,
okay,
but then there's
a step forward then.
A little delay.
Give me the bag. Okay, a little to the left. There. Nope. Rotate left. Okay.
Dave Scott and Jim Irwin ready to climb aboard the rover and go off on the second excursion on the moon, the second of three extravehicular excursions to sample lunar geology, the Apennine Front. They'll go some 7.5 kilometers away today. We've got word that as they go off during this first run, they may pass by station number 4, Fred, and go right on down toward Front Crater. This is on past a crater called Dune Crater in the secondary cluster we were talking about a few minutes ago, which Fred reminds me was... expected to have come from the crater Autolycus, which is up there in the Mare Imbrium.
Okay.
What was that dune crater that they might... They might pick that up on the way back. They passed it coming home.
Yeah, the hopes were to sample up to the rim of dune and once again get the get a vertical sampling down into what those craters have penetrated and maybe get the strange material, some of the secondary... foreign material that made the craters, if indeed they are secondary craters, and also to get another exposure through the Mare.
Mm-hmm.
That is it, Hadley.
This is Rhett Turner in Houston with astronaut Fred Hayes, bringing you on the Voice of America a description of the second extravehicular excursion of astronauts David Scott and Jim Irwin on the surface of the moon at what's called Hadley Base. Beside Hadley Rill, near the Apennine Mountains of the Moon, expected to be of the very oldest formations on the lunar surface. Here's Dave Scott and Jim Irwin.
Okay, get the 70 millimeter camera and the bags. And
Scott.
It's fixing to hook up the cameras and
tape
the small sampling bags to their suits.
LRV battery cover, sir.
Now, each man has to help his buddy on some of this in order to mount this equipment on the cliffs. This is the cameras go on the front, though.
That's right. Right onto the an attach point right on the control unit.
For the backpack?
It's closed.
Mm-hmm. The EMU, or the control panel for the backpack. Since he can't turn around and read meters and indicators on the back of the backpack, there's a control unit mounted on the front so that he can check the status of the PLSS, the Portable Life Support System. The camera mounts on the front of this on the astronaut's chest. Each man has a camera, I believe.
That's correct.
You can do those two bags there in front of you. I'm going to put them under the seat.
Scott's asking Irwin what he's going to do with those two bags there. Irwin says, I'm going to put them under the seat. Communication is very, very clear. We can hear them quite well. Hope that wherever you're listening with us, it's early morning here in Houston. In fact, it isn't quite daylight yet. Just beginning to be daylight.
I wouldn't get rid of bag two because it has all your tools in it.
Right. We hope that our Voice of America signal is very clear wherever you may be. Let's listen. They're running about an hour, just a bit over an hour late, and getting underway for this sampling
can't
excursion.
Can't see the solar wind there, Joe. It looks like it's blowing.
Roger, I'm sure it must be, Dave. A little bit, at least.
If I buckle myself.
The window shade. This is this silver window shade device, which is set up so that the... sun will shine on it and gather in radiation particle information for Dr. Johannes Geis and his studies of solar particles, which radiate from the sun and will not reach the Earth because of our atmosphere, but there in the unprotected environment of the moon, he can get some very valuable information. That device is flown on all of the Apollo moon landings.
Exercise the forward steering procedure here.
All right, now they're going to try out that forward steering procedure. Let's see if it works, Fred.
Okay,
I know you're
interested
in this.
It first, just the way it was. And then we'll try the circuit breaker, right?
Roger. The forward steering switch should be at bus Charlie, and the forward steering circuit breaker should be finally closed, and then attempt forward steering.
You know what I bet you did last night, Joe? You let some of those Marshall guys come up here and fix it, didn't you?
It's working.
They've been working, that's for sure.
It works, Dave? Yes, sir. It's working, my friend.
That's what he had to mean when he said
beautiful.
That little... The front wheels are steering like they're supposed to.
A lot of smiles on that one, Dave. We might as well use it today.
Well... Boeing has a secret booster somewhere to take care of their rover.
This rover was built by the Boeing company, the people who build the big 747 and 707 airplanes. He says, oh, that's so much better.
And under the management of the Marshall Space Center, which was why his reference to Marshall.
Yes, he was referring to the people down at Huntsville, Alabama. This was the group of Dr. Wernher von Braun, which developed the big Saturn rocket also. And now that the rocket is built, they had the assignment of designing the rover. And the Boeing company built it.
It's really strange. I wouldn't have given much... chance of that procedure working, but it sure did.
Okay, they're off and going here. Since we don't hear anything, we...
Okay, Houston, I'm at the nav site, and I'll reset here. And I'll give you the readings.
Roger, Dave, standing by.
He's oriented the rover around to what's called the navigation site.
To make sure we're balanced up off.
And I presume he's going to zero his gyro at this point, huh? His navigation unit?
Yes.
Okay, roll is one to the left. Pitch is about one down. And bearing distance and range have recycled to zero, and the heading on there now is 305. And the sun shadow device is about, a half to one to the right.
Roger, Dave, and when you're ready, you can start torquing towards 285, and we'll modify that in a minute.
Now, that's real pilot's talk. Fred,
okay. Help
us.
Okay, what he's done is told him what his baseline reading is, just as the gyros come up to speed, which gives them direction. He gave them a sun angle. The ground interpreted the sun angle. Of course, we know where the sun's sitting, so he converted that to a new heading that he now has to crank in, which will be his base starting heading.
Now, from this point on, the navigation unit on the rover, which is an inertial guidance system, will tell the astronauts where the limb is. No matter where they go, it'll tell them the direction to get home. Here's Joe Allen. Let's listen.
9 clicks towards checkpoint number one.
Joe's giving them the directions and the distance toward their first checkpoint.
Wait, you got to get up, Jim. You're leaning too far back. Logan, grab the hand low. Attaboy. Okay, now you sit down. You're in good shape. If I can just get down.
Now, you will hear throughout this excursion references on heading back to the limb. And that will always be the compass direction back to home base. No matter what direction they happen to turn in the rover, this device will always tell them which direction it is home.
Okay, 283, Joe. Can you get your seatbelt, Jim? Let's ride right now.
Jim's, let's see if that seatbelt works properly this time. He got it on yesterday, it was tight.
Let me have it here, man. There now, but you can get it.
He's now extended the slack all the way out, extended the belt all the way out, as much slack as
he wants. Did you copy 283 heading, and we're standing by for total nav readouts before you depart the station.
Okay, Joe, we'll park at 283. Reading about 284 now. Bearing distance range, of course, are zero. Amps are 100, 108, 68, 78, and motor temps forward and rear are off scale low.
Roger, Jim, copy, and the motor temps are normal.
Now, every time they stop
the
rover...
You're going to park to 283, Dave. Yeah, just hold on. That darn cannon plug again down there. You want me to hold it?
Every time they stop the rover, we'll get this readout from Jim Irwin on the status of the rover so that we know not only the temperatures of the battery, whether the motors are running hot in each of the wheels, but also the navigation readings on that gyro device we described a moment ago.
That bumps against the... Hello, careful.
Jim said something about the first antenna, whether it was bumping something there or not.
Here we go.
Both astronauts are on the rover, and as he says, here we go. So they're about to take off to the south.
And at looking at the EVA time, they're about 5 minutes behind with respect to the checklist time. We're starting for point one.
From the time they started on the excursion.
Yes.
In their 6.5 or so hour period.
Here we go.
56 minutes now since they've been out. Since the EVA began.
They got parked up 283. It's almost on 283.
They're going to drive south down past one of their major landmarks during the descent and touchdown on the surface of the moon, a crater called Index Crater.
Okay.
They'll go right by one called Arbite.
Okay, we're off. Joe, we're moving.
Now we're moving, says
Dave
Scott.
Give us that heading again.
Roger, and we're marking. We want you to proceed towards checkpoint number one. Your general heading is 160 at 1.9 clicks. And this may take you down between Salute and Index Craters.
There we are. There's the instruction from Earth and confirmation of the direction they're going to move.
K-160.
The Salyut crater.
I'd like to go down there and see those just for drill.
The Salyut crater named for the Russian space station.
No one should come to Hadley Rill without seeing Index Crater, and we'll try to keep you posted and when you're coming up on that.
Okay, fine. Joe, I'm going to start the camera here. Will you keep track of it? I'm on 12 frames per second.
Roger, Jim. We're marking it now. Thank you.
Why don't you hold off for a while, Jim? Okay.
He's talking
never
about...
Never mind. Hold on. Let me...
Roger.
Get away here. Okay.
He's talking about the movie camera, which takes pictures just 12 frames per second.
The
document
is... Steering's a new task, Joe. It's really responsive now. I guess I got pretty used to a quiet steering, and this thing... really turns.
Roger, Dave. We don't want it to be too easy for you.
We can always disengage the rear steering. Yeah, I get used to it. It's just a matter of getting used to.
So just in the 5 hours or so, well, they didn't actually drive it that much, just in the time he drove it yesterday, he got used to that rear method.
We have a very large subdued crater. I'd estimate 400 or 500 meters across. It has a crater of about 25 meters on its eastern inner wall, about halfway to the bottom. And on that smaller crater, there's some rock exposed. Looks like some bedrock exposed in that particular crater. Come on, hold up here.
That's a lot bigger than anything we see on the aerial photography.
Oh, just rear steering, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, we're stopping, Joe.
Just a minute.
Okay, Jim, stopping.
Let's see why they're
stopping. Try it that way. Okay, we're moving again.
Roger, and your description is remarkably similar to Index. Perhaps you're looking at Index Crater.
That's a big one, if it is. This is 400 or 500 meters. The index is expected to be.
I guess it's the largest crater that I've seen, Joe.
Roger, we'll reserve judgment on that, but keep describing, please. Sounds great.
If they're going on
okay, we're heading 155, and at 1 o'clock position, there's a doublet. I think it's a doublet we drove across yesterday. I'll tell you in a moment when we see our track. Do you want to talk, Dave?
I just want to tell him I turned off the rear steering. See how she works with the front. It's really a lot better. The double Ackerman's a little too responsive when you have the lack of traction, especially on the slopes.
Roger, Dave. Copy that. Why don't we save the double Ackerman for the rougher terrain later on?
What was that word?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Ackerman. Fancy word for four-wheel steering.
Okay, I mentioned those. It's really a triplet arrangement here that we just passed on our right. I did not see our track.
Roger.
We're definitely east of our track from yesterday.
Roger, we agree.
We're heading 170.
Jim Irwin. Astronaut Jim Irwin describing their path of movement. From where they're believed to have landed, they probably are right on Index
Crater
there. Alan's asking them to look for Arbite Crater.
I think so, Joe.
Yeah.
I think so. There's a fairly fresh one here with the angular blocks on the rim.
Roger, give us the size on the largest, please.
Yeah, I see it.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Yes, the largest ones, I would estimate 2 or 3 feet, angular. There's one on the southeast rim that has a flat top. In fact, it looks like a rectangular block. But there's several fragments down there that have the Pahoy Hoy texture that Dave mentioned yesterday. However subtle.
Pahoy Hoy.
It's a name given to by Hawaiian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, range is 0.6. We're heading 160.
Still the volcanics that are found in Hawaii, and the two types of flows
Dave
are
doing 8 to 9 clicks.
And Pahoehoe.
Okay, Dave, sounds good.
Pahoehoe.
Pahoehoe.
That's part that some of your geological
okay,
training is in Hawaii.
Is,
okay, let's listen.
I get my hand down there, Dave. Go ahead.
This Arbeit crater is named for the German word for work or toil.
Okay, reading the max looks like about 10 amps.
Roger, good enough.
Being on 2.
Read out on...
Okay, coming up on our right is a very subdued crater again. No blush at all on its rim, and it's about 50 meters in diameter.
Let me stop and get the rear steering
wheel. We stopped, Joe.
That could be the Salyut crater, possibly.
There we're going again, Joe.
Okay.
I don't believe they would quite have reached Arbeit yet.
See a very large crater over at 1 o'clock.
Let me just get the steering squared away here, Jim.
Yeah. Okay, we've stopped.
That large crater
Roger,
at 1
Jim,
o'clock.
That might very well be Earthlight at 1 o'clock.
Earthlight?
And
oh, boy.
And Domingo crater should be on your left now.
They're going faster than I thought.
Yes.
Earthlight.
Okay, we'll give you a little more report when we get a little closer to it.
Roger.
Earthlight is a crater informally named for Arthur C. Clarke's novel. Of that name.
Too many comments here until Dave gets the steering squared away.
Roger.
It feels like the rear steering, when I turn it off, doesn't center. Feels like my rear wheels are drifting. So I guess I better turn it back on.
I noticed he stopped every time he made that change.
Yes.
Is that because the mechanism centers and it could disrupt your path of movement?
Well, when you're messing with steering, it's just better to be stopped in case it runs away or something
maybe,
on you.
You should turn it back on.
Whoa.
There was a word from the ground. Okay,
yeah,
maybe
I guess you might think about why they don't center for us.
Roger, it sounds like the rover moves like Jim's sand crabs move.
Yeah, that's just exactly what it feels like, too.
Dave, if you could swing to the right here, we could go by the rim of Earthlight, what you're calling Earthlight.
Good. Let's do that.
There's
a big thing here in front of us, too.
Yeah, but we could... Can you get around to the right?
Maybe not. Let's go left. We're not going to stop at Earthlight. Let's go left. Because it's a big excursion there.
They're going around to the east side of this Earthlight crater. So
now we're not
supposed to stop
down slope.
Yeah, we're going in and out of the craters.
They're right beside.
I get the impression off to our left that there is a shallow depression there. Gee, over to the left, there's a big hole. Huh.
There are a bunch of big craters farther to the left too.
Yeah, a big subtle crater. Oop, and we're coming up on a sharp one.
This whole secondary crater cluster now is off to their left as they're moving south.
You got those two ahead of us there?
Yeah.
You said 160 degrees. I believe he would have turned a little bit more south by now.
See if we can find a reasonable path through here.
The plan. Picking his way between the rocks and the craters, the boulders and the craters.
Okay, we're heading 140. We're out to 1.0.
Roger, Jim, copy.
To a 9-plex.
Beautiful.
It's quite easterly, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going by a very large one here. We're at 9:30. 9 o'clock, Jim.
Huh? Yeah.
What do you suppose that is?
Could be Domingo.
It's too big.
Too big for Domingo?
A couple hundred meters.
But, one out. Let's see, checkpoint one is... at 1.7.
He's talking about, there's another crater called Domingo.
Mm-hmm. Dave and Jim, that could be possibly Index Crater if you started from where we thought. The distance is right on that. And continue on towards checkpoint one.
Yeah. Well, you know...
Okay, I would say that probably was Index. It was about that size.
Now we're backing up, way back up from where we thought
we were.
Okay,
you've got the right bearing. Yeah, that's nice, huh?
Yeah, and we're going for 1.7.
Going for it, yeah, okay, we're 1.2 now.
Yeah.
Nice.
In other words,
smooth and rounded.
In other words, from where they actually landed,
yeah, one of these trips we ought to
this
stop
may have It may have been considerably farther to the north and east than we have been tracking them here, from which point we have been tracking them.
Just filled with debris and glass in the middle. Just do a systematic sampling on it.
Yes.
Like this one over here at 1 o'clock.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Okay, bearing is now 339 and the range is 1.3. Look out. Maybe. Okay, all right.
Yep.
Great machine.
Yep, this is good.
The rover navigated some challenge there.
Yeah, obviously. Either run over a rock or over a very sharp ridge that they came up on, I suppose.
Oh, not a sound now. Well, that's unusual.
It's very quiet.
Yeah.
Okay, rover, checkpoint one is 160 at 1.9 clicks, and there's no need to stop there. We can press on towards checkpoint two if you're satisfied.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Roger. I guess we're okay, Jim.
You mentioned
it. We've got the right bearing. We're at 1.4 now, Joe.
Okay, Jim, and we're enjoying your description.
They're 1.4 kilometers away, or is that nautical miles again?
That's nautical miles.
He said six.
Keep our running comment on your eyes on the road.
Sounds like a good idea.
A crater on our right now, about 50 meters in diameter, with a lot of gray fragments on its rim, and we're just passing one that's sitting right on the surface.
This is Dave Scott and Jim
about
Irwin is here. Traversing the lunar surface in their lunar rover, the little dune buggy.
I can look out now and see the south cluster.
Now he can see the south cluster ahead of him.
I get the impression of perhaps some horizontal beds in the first mound in the south cluster.
They come up over a ridge or a high ridge, which may very well be the crater rim of Index Crater, and he can see a good bit to his south now. This is Jim Irwin describing it.
Appears to be in the secondary cluster.
Roger, Jim. Copy.
We're in, probably over in the area of Crescent. Okay, we're 1.7. And... again, we have a very fresh crater on our left with several blocks.
Okay, the rover is on its way down to front crater, some 7.5 kilometers away from the landing site. Fred Hayes, what's your general impression of the beginning of this excursion here?
Well, excursion itself, time-wise, seems to be going pretty well. Once again, things may tend to stretch out because, as we can hear, they're continuing to run into various obstacles and craters that they have to deviate around, so it might take them a little longer.
Okay, thanks, and we'll be back with more shortly from Mission Control and from the Moon.
You're listening to the Voice of America's coverage of the flight of Apollo 15, now 143 hours, 25 minutes into the mission. Astronauts Scott and Irwin are making their second traverse by lunar rover for geological investigations and photography en route to and along the foot of the Apennine Mountains. Following the news, the Voice of America will return to the air with its special coverage in 15 minutes at 13 hours 15 Greenwich Mean Time for a further report. This is Les Higbee at the Apollo News Center. This program has come to you from the United States of America.